Welcome to Talking Early Years, the Early Years podcast that I host, Juno Sullivan. And today I have the lovely Charlotte Riley with me. Charlotte has a very interesting career in acting, but more recently in childcare, actually setting up nurseries in the film industry. And to celebrate Women's Day 2022, I thought she'd be a great guest to have on the podcast because her world is such an interesting world, and she's breaking quite a lot of ice in the film industry. So I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself, Charlotte, and tell us a little bit about Wonderworks and the story behind it, and you know what your plans are and what you're doing.
Don't know where to start now. Wonderworks is really born out of, well, for me, for my experience, where I was many years now, about 6 years ago, I went back to acting after having my first child, and my experience as somebody who is was a lead actor, I was allowed to bring my child on set. You know, things were organized, I was really supported. It was a job for the BBC and they were really fantastic about it, and I felt massively supported, and I was allowed to bring somebody with me to look after my child while I worked. But that was diametrically opposed to what other people on the set were experiencing. So whilst I was there really enjoying having my child with me, the rest of the crew were struggling, and they were really wonderful about me having my child there. Like, isn't this so lovely that he's here and he's with you? But that left me sort of feeling, hang on a minute, this is not right. I'm, you know, because I'm in a privileged position, I'm able to have my child with me and continue to work. But there's loads of people who are missing out here. And it didn't take a huge amount of talking to other people, scratching the surface, meeting the brilliant women behind Raising Films, to discover that 85% of people in our industry, the Production Guild did a survey recently, 85% of people know somebody who's left the industry when they became a parent. And 79% of people said that when they became a parent, it negatively impacted their career. Okay. So, I was sitting on lots of panels, listening to lots of people discussing about, you know, how we're losing huge amounts of brilliantly talented parents, and particularly women when they become mothers and fathers, purely because we work in an industry that's so, you can't use an ordinary nursery. We work really, really long hours. So there's just this complete block to getting back to work. So that's really where the idea came from. And I wanted to just do something really practical. And, you know, it drives me nuts when we talk about things, but it's like, right, come on, let's think of something really practical to do. So I worked with my business partner, and we created a mobile facility that's on a double-decker bus, which is really great fun, which we've just been using out at a film set over in Wales. And then we've just recently worked with Warner Brothers to open a facility there. So that's up and running now, which is really exciting. And what we're seeing now is that, for example, some of the biggest things that really excite me is that we've got double income families for the first time, which is huge in our industry, because a lot of parents find that they have to work. They can't work in parallel. They have to take turns working, which seriously affects people's income because of the hours. You always have to have one parent at home. So, you know, we had to overcome the challenge of what our industry needs, which is a huge amount of flexibility. And it's the level of flexibility that we provide that allows the parents to keep a foot in the door. So one of the things that's quite interesting about how our industry works is that you don't just have a job for a long period of time. So what we found was the film industry, that we sort of pop up and then we go down again. So we exist, and it's very, very intense for 9 months, and then everybody disbands. So it's very easy for the industry not to monitor its mid to long term social impact. But now the industry is really booming in Britain, and you've got these really big companies such as Disney and Warner Brothers taking up long-term space in studios. And so they're able to now monitor their short-term social impact, which they weren't able to do before. So, you know, you have companies like, for example, Goldman Sachs, who noticed, you know, 20 years ago that they were losing swathes of people in their 30s. And so they did something about it. So people like Goldman Sachs, they've had nurseries for a long, long time, but we've never tackled this because it's not been that obvious. But now there are, you know, people lobbying for us to notice this change and to do something about these issues that we face, especially when we're having a huge boom in the industry and we can't crew up for love nor money. So one of the difficult things was you know, really early years in the film industry are a little bit like, is it oil and vinegar? Is that what they say? Oil and water? Like the two things. The reason it's not been done before is because it's really difficult to get those two worlds to meet, because people do these sort of short-term jobs. Well, you can't get childcare at the drop of a hat unless you're relying on family. And that's, you know, not everybody has their, you know, mum or auntie or grandma living nearby. So one of the easiest ways for a parent to stay in the industry, and particularly a mother or a woman, is we have in the industry sort of short-term jobs. So you have what's called your main unit, so they're shooting the main part of the film, and then you have second unit and they're shooting the second part of the film. So there's often short-term jobs. Mm-hmm. So a woman, for example, let's say a woman has had her child and the child is 3 months old, but she doesn't want to go back to full-time work, but she wants to keep her foot in the door with her head of department. So she wants to do 2 weeks work. So she's staying relevant. Her CV is staying up to date. She's able to figure out, how on earth do I embrace this mad world of parenting and the mad world of filmmaking at the same time? So what's brilliant is if you can have flexible childcare where she can use the nursery just for 2 weeks, then she can figure out how she parents and works at the same time. And that's, for me, is how you retain people between that, you know, 0 to 3 years old, when they're trying to just figure it out, how you do both. And you know, those are such, I think people are quite scared of talking about the sort of the interesting fragility of a parent when they're a new parent, and how do you navigate the world now that this little person's totally turned your world upside down. And I think people supporting families through that is really important to, you know, retaining people. And our industry is fantastic at investment at grassroots. So we have millions of pounds pumped into diversity and equality, you know, so we've got, we're getting all that diversity, we're getting that equality at grassroots, but then we lose it all when people are in their 30s. So it's sort of, it just, to me, it makes complete sense that you've got to support people through the hardest point of their life, mm-hmm. especially if you want to retain that diversity, that equality that you've put so much time and investment into at the grassroots level.
You raised so many interesting points there, because there's the thing about the leading actor. I don't know if that you're called actresses anymore, but you know, the female lead and the power that can bring. But actually, I imagine the sector is made up of mostly non-leading actors, that actually the rest, you know, is just your ordinary, you know, person who's, I don't know, a company actor, or, you know, the film crew and all the other stuff that goes with it. So that's just interesting that you raise that, because I think the perception we have can be very sort of, I suppose, overlaid by that sort of celebrity lens. So, I mean, you're a well-known actress, and therefore, you know, like, you have a really opportunity for a great voice. But like for the up-and-coming struggling and people not in the film industry, but in the associated industries around it, may end up in the film industry, it's an interesting argument to be shared in the kind of glitzy world, the so-called glitzy world, where you actually have to look at the basis of things like childcare, you know.
Yeah.
You know, whoever thought of such a thing? You just don't associate, you know, when you're, you know, you're thinking of The Devil Wears Prada, you imagine that there's a nursery in the background there.
Well, I think,
and in fact, she has a nanny, doesn't she? She has this poor nanny who's sort of battered. But
I think there's this misconception that all that exists is what you see on the screen, but actually, you know, that's just a very, very, you know, the actors are just very one small cog in a huge machine. I mean, there's often 500 people behind making that work. And every single one of those people is absolutely vital to the quality of the stories that are being told. So if you know, yes, diversity and equality on screen, but the quality on screen is only as good as the diversity and the equality of the people making it. So if you're not, if it takes, you know, let's just call, you know, hit the nail on the head. If it takes a woman all of their 20s to gain the skills that they need to become a brilliant writer or a brilliant director or a brilliant director of photography, or, you know, they get themselves into a male dominated department like the electricals department. Well, then if they have to make a choice between their film family and having a family, then you're not going to see that reflected on the screen, because most women, most people are becoming to the apex of their career at the same time as they're wanting to have a family. You know, we have, you know, something that I'm really passionate about tackling is having a welcoming space for women who, you know, a lot of women in our industry leave it later in life to have, as lots of women do, later in life to try for family. There's no space for those women to administer medication safely and in a clean environment. You know, there's lots of things like this that sort of need tackling. But, you know, if we want this equality to be reflected on the screen, you've got to have women lighting it, directing it, you know, doing the sound engineering.
And then maybe making films where actually childcare is a feature rather than a problem at the edge or not there at all, but actually as a central point, because it's about also an environment where it's focused around care, which has got low status in this environment anyway, but also it is run by women, led by women, supported by women, delivered by women. And actually there's something about that is never, that is never seen either, so that I can see then there'll be a disconnect between the kind of glitz and glam of the, so, you know, the film industry, which of course, you know, is much, much deeper than that, but also the kind of lowly position of the person who looks after the child type thing. So it's a really, you are in a really interesting position to start a really big debate about those positioning, the positioning of women and the kind of feminist sisterhood and where we support each other, etc., in delivering an equitable and fairly accessible environment for women of all cultures, class, backgrounds, to actually enter into that sort of world. Yeah. So for me, you're cracking a ceiling that's also about wider societal perceptions and status.
I mean, something that I feel, you know, really passionate about is I really, really fighting to make sure that our teachers have credits in the films that they work on, because if people are seeing that there are 10 members of crew that wouldn't be there without these teachers taking care of their children, then society needs to understand that these people who are nurturing these little minds are so important. Mm-hmm. A parent struggles to do a really great creative job if they don't know that their child's well-being isn't really well cared for. And that's what we try to do, and I know you do with the nurseries that you work in, that it's really important that, you know, those, we're literally feeding those neural pathways of those children's brains, and if those children are going on their like learning adventure, we want our parents to be able to be going, continuing on their learning adventure. And it's really important that the people are able to work in the knowledge that their child's being, they're not just being cared for, but they're on an actual educational learning journey. They're not sort of, all right, well, they're fine, I can go and work. You're at work feeling, my child's having a really great time, and they're those teachers are building the foundations of my child's education. And that's, you know, it's a really important aspect of being able to go back to work and feel comfortable with what you're doing.
It was interesting because I was thinking about that. I was thinking about how you fit the child into this model. When you mentioned at the beginning that some people are 2 weeks here, short term there, and you're running the double decker bus, which takes me right back to many hundreds of years ago. We used to have our toy library in a double decker bus all around Battersea. But how have you developed a pedagogy or a model or an approach that actually allows for the staff to understand and to figure out the settling in and the transitions that these children are going to have experience? Because that's such an important part of the whole relationship that's built between teacher and child.
How do you mean, in terms of, because of the transient nature of some of the children?
And the settling in and then the moving and the short period, and how they connect with something that they might not be with on a regular basis. Easy enough if they come in Monday, even like Monday to Thursday or Tuesday to Friday, whatever it is, there's a regularity and there's a pattern and then people get to know them. But you're talking about people who might be on blocks of work, and then what happens the rest?
Yeah, so it's interesting because this was always something when we started that concerned us, that the teachers are going to be constantly dealing all the time with children that are settling. But what we've come up with at Warner Brothers is that we have a certain amount of community children. So the community children are there regularly. We have regular film community children as well.
Okay.
And so actually the big bulk of our nursery are regular children. And then we do have these ad hoc children, but because they're surrounded by children that are very familiar with the structure, the teachers are very familiar with settling children, and then the nature of it, the environment with which they're coming into, is very cozy, very homey. So they can have, if a child needs to be immediately stimulated as they come in, there's plenty to do. Or if they need a quiet, cozy area to sort of sit and observe and watch the other children and find their place and sit with a teacher, then there's that ability to do that as well. So I think the approach that we've taken is one that is child-led and allows the child to find their feet whilst being supported by a highly skilled teacher. But we do have a lot of children that are very regular, because what's brilliant now that we've existed is that we're finding that parents are actually, and this is great for Warner Brothers, that parents are actually choosing to work at Warner Brothers now. So often we'll have people who come and try it for this one-off period, and it works so well for them that they actually just stay, and then they continue to find jobs at Warner Brothers. So it's great for them because now they get a loyalty from their crew, because they're like, great. So I know that, and I predict in the future that we live, crew and actors, we live such a nomadic life that we're always traveling around. And actually, in your 20s, that's kind of nice. But when you have a family, it doesn't really work. So I think that we'll probably see more crew gathering in certain areas of the country near studios, so that they can go, right, we're going to have our family now, and I know this studio provides childcare, therefore we're going to be loyal to this studio and have our children. And what's some of the best things that literally make my heart sing on a daily basis is that we've now got parents who have one child, and they said, we were only going to have one because we couldn't figure out how to make it work with two, but we're actually going to have another child now, which is great. Or then you do meet other people who've like, well, I would have had more children if I'd known this existed.
Yeah.
Or I would have had a child if this had existed, because, I know that sounds archaic, but that's still the world that we live in, where women are still making the choice. The weirdest thing that I could never have predicted is we are now listed as the childcare department on a film. So you have the hair and makeup, you have costume, you have set deck, you have the electricals, and we are the childcare department. So that's led to quite a few phone calls from other departments to myself and colleagues, saying, from 20-year-olds going, oh my gosh, I can't believe this exists. This literally future-proofs my career.
Yeah,
I'm 20. I'm not going to be using it anytime soon. But knowing that it exists means that I can stay in the industry. And that I could never have predicted, that it's actually as important to the 20-year-old as it is to the people who are currently parents. So that, for me,
That's actually a really brilliant thing to hear, because recently, and this is a slight diversion here, Charlotte, but you do know me. And I've been really doing a lot of work around menopause, because I'm at that sort of in that something that kind of is, you know, part of my life. And I was very much delighted by the response I got of so many women saying to me, thank you for just raising this and having a policy about it and just talking about it, you know, with a lot of the time with humor, but, you know, still talking about it. And then I said to the young staff, who are sort of slightly rolling their eyes a bit, are thinking slightly, oh, what are they on about now type thing. I said, listen, this is coming down the line for you as well, so you might get behind us, because there's no escaping this. And so it's really interesting to see that you're already picking that up, that younger women are recognizing there will be a point, or there may well be a point in their lives when they have to think about childcare in a much more deeper and meaningful way than this abstract idea of a nursery somewhere tucked away in the corner of a studio.
And I think, you know, the fact that you raise this, the you know, the challenges that the menopause brings for women, somebody who's 40, I really relish when people talk about the menopause, because I want to understand, you know, there's so many aspects of life now where women are so disparate that we don't have this women's hut where we can congregate and understand, and women of all different ages are sharing information so that you can grow and learn from each other. And, you know, I really appreciate it when women of different ages, especially women who are older than me, raise things so that I can understand what I'm going to be experiencing. And you know, menopause is definitely something that's very rarely discussed within the film industry. But, you know, as we need a space for women to administer fertility treatment, we need a space where so that women who are experiencing the menopause while they're filming can go and rest, or, you know, if they need a weighted blanket, or they need, you know, they can access a helpline, or they can, you know, have a cup of tea, or they can get some ice, or whatever it is that brings them comfort when they're experiencing symptoms. That we need a space for that. We need a space where women who are experiencing a miscarriage can go and take a beat, because, you know, I don't think that people really understand that. People think that you experience a miscarriage and it's over and done with. It can take 3 weeks to fully miscarry, and you don't get signed off by your doctor. And I know so many women who continue filming while they're miscarrying, and knowing some that there's a private space that they can go if they need a minute while they're going through that life experience. These things need to exist, and they're only going to exist if we discuss them, if people say, you know, I was on set while I was miscarrying and I didn't have this support and I need it. And you know, the other aspect that, you know, I've come to understand, not something that I've personally experienced myself, but, you know, I have many friends who have experienced miscarriage whilst working on a set. And I think there's this misconception that when you miscarry, that it's an experience that's over and done with quite quickly, and then you are able to get on and grieve. But actually, it's not. It can be something that takes up to 3 weeks to naturally miscarry, if that's the way that experience goes. And, you know, people don't get signed off by their doctor while they're having that experience. And you do, some people are working, and to have a space where that, you know, it's a quiet space where you're not going to be interrupted, that you can get sanitary towels, that you can have just a bit of downtime somewhere that's safe to be. I think people need to be supported through these life experiences that, you know, we, particularly our industry, can be quite a masochistic place. It's sort of like you have to sanitize being human and just crack on, because there's somebody else who's better at sanitizing themselves and being a robot. And I think, you know, we are getting better, but it takes people talking about these things and raising the fact that it's really interesting, because we, you know, we go around and talk to crews and we'll feed back to producers and say, well, you know, you've got 7 pregnant people, and they're like, really? It's like, yeah, people don't divulge that they're pregnant, or they don't divulge. You know, we had one parent say to us, came to us, and he said, I've just had a really odd experience. And we said, what's that? And he said, well, I've just gone for a job, and I know that my child is at the nursery, but I've just lied, because they said, do you have children? And I lied and said no. because I felt it was the right answer. Because there's a sort of, you know, even in recruitment, people don't mean to, but the way you ask questions is even in, you know, even intimidating, so that people feel that, oh, hang on a minute, I feel like I really ought to be this footloose and fancy free singleton that can move and shapeshift in any way that's required of me. So yeah, there's a lot of things that need discussing, just so that we can make our industry a more comfortable place to be, as well as creative. It's also a more human experience.
Well, this is true. And I loved your point earlier about that network of women and of all different ages and connections, and like feeling okay to talk about things. I mean, and I think when you get together a group of women of all different ages, especially old women, I think we've learned enough wisdom to actually rely on the power of humor to sort of see you through quite a few things. And I think it probably is quite reassuring to other women to hear that, you know, you've gone through it and you can survive, and these are the ways to go around these things, but also to make it a more natural narrative. But you know, it does point to another big issue, I think, that I'm sure you've kind of recognized, but it's the other end of that journey for women, really. It's that ageist approach that, you know, you get to a certain age and you've no value anymore. And I just wondering about how just starting with childcare and, you know, using that as a care kind of narrative to then build into conversations about, as you said, miscarrying, having children, navigating that whole role of parenthood, children leaving, the menopause, and you still have some value in your life till you're, you know, about to die kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder what you think about that, because it seems to me that the conversation about ageism becomes either a campaign thing or a shock horror thing and then dies away. But actually, it's a really, really life-giving, powerful sort of conversation that needs to be had for all those women who have all that life experience that's then kind of ignored because they hit a particular age. I mean, is that something that, you know, is beginning to kind of filter through your thinking about this in terms of as you crack the issue of inequality in your particular sector?
I think one of the things that's occurred to me over the years of sort of looking at this is what's really great about trying to keep families in film is that, childcare aside, there is a really simple solution is that the hours, the big issue for us is the hours that people work. So, you know, we often work 15 hours a day. Well, there aren't many parents that want to work 15 hours a day, but there also aren't many people over the age of, let's say, 60 that want to work 15 hours a day. So for me, if you could take the life experience of somebody who's over 60 and that brilliant magic that a parent has because they're just able to do a million things at once because they've just got this, I don't know, like it opens something up, doesn't it, when you become a parent, that you just suddenly have capabilities that you never knew. And you put those people together in a job sharing situation so that both people get to stay in the industry. Gets to benefit from both of those experiences, that you're not then having to champion one or the other. Actually, you're bringing, it's not about being an age, it's about quality. It's about what quality do you have at that point of your life? You know, when you're in your 20s, you've got endless levels of enthusiasm and thirst for more knowledge and just energy. And then, you know, maybe in your 30s, it's qualities of being able to spin a million plates. And maybe in your 60s, it's that sort of more considered wisdom. So if you can bring these things together, then it's not one or the other. It's not binary. So I guess that's just something that came to me about ageism and actually retaining people that, you know, people get pushed out because they're like, I don't want to work 15 hours a day.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah, we lose out. I mean, I suppose as we conclude this conversation, I don't know if you have the same issues, but I mean, we're having such big problems staffing our nurseries. Yeah. And yeah, it's not just us. It's the whole, you know, hospitality, retail, everywhere seems to be, you know, struggling with staff at the moment. And so it seemed to me that where do you go for sort of older staff? You know, why is there older staff who may well want to give you 2 days a week, or, you know, half a day, mm-hmm. you know, half a day, 5 days a week, or whatever it is, but we could bring that out. And I began to look, and there's no real easy space to find where you might find those people. And it just struck me as really sort of something that we could really kind of look deeper into about it.
Yeah, there's all the qualities that get overlooked in people who want to do something that's high quality for a shorter period of time. I mean, that's just.
Yeah, it's just a no-brainer, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, especially, like you say, at the moment when it's so difficult to, you know, if the film industry is finding it hard to crew up, as we call it. You know, our industry, the childcare sector, early years sector, is everybody's struggling with recruitment. And it's sad, though, isn't it, that it takes a sort of recruiting...
pandemic.
Yeah. to sort of make people think out of the box in terms of the people that we hire, sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, I just think they have, older people have so much to offer.
Yeah, exactly. We're very foolish. It was a bit like ignoring men out in childcare, you know, by cutting out half the population. What kind of carry on is that, you know?
Yeah, totally. Couldn't agree more.
So, Charlotte, we've come to the end of our time, and I very much enjoy talking to you because your enthusiasm is wonderful and energetic and energizing. So I always benefit from that. So it's sort of slightly selfish, my point as well. I'm just going to conclude with... just for those people who will be particularly interested in your work, and your work as an actor as well as the lead of the Wonderworks, what are your next steps?
In terms of acting?
Everything, in terms of every project possible.
Well, in terms of acting, I'm just finished doing a TV show called The Peripheral, which will be on Amazon, which was great fun, by the guys who made Westworld. And in terms of the Wonderworks, we're basically cracking on making sure that it becomes more of an industry standard, really. And we're wanting to offer our services to other studios so that ideally as many people can access it as possible. So hopefully it will become a more countrywide thing, hopefully.
Brilliant. Well, I'm delighted that you would be joining on our campaign to raise the status of early years at every level and to put children right at the heart of our society. So thank you so much for talking to us, and I look forward to watching your progression, and also I will figure out how to download your Peripheral and watch it on Amazon.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Talking Early Years, and thank you again to my guest, Charlotte Riley, and for all of you who are listening to this on International Women's Day, have a fab day and make it an International Women's Year. Thank you for joining me today. If you like what you heard, please share it or check us out on our website, leaf.org.uk.